At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Plenty to be talking about over the next 60 minutes. We'll be looking ahead to England's game in Prague tonight. They take on the Czech Republic, knowing that all 3 points will secure their place at Euro 2020 next summer. We'll be wondering what sort of 11 Gareth Southgate will pick. We're expecting Mason Mount to be in that midfield in place of his Chelsea teammate Ross Barkley. We'll be hearing some of the views of Steve Howie, who was on the Breakfast Show this morning about his views on this England team at the moment. We'll also be talking about Chelsea, talking about Mason Mount in particular with his club form, but also where Frank Lampard is currently taking this Chelsea side. We'll also be talking to about Crystal Palace, who've made a pretty solid start to the season and won 2-1 away at West Ham last weekend. We'll also be debating about which managers are right on the brink, who could be losing their job in this international break or going forward before the next international break. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 2558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to be talking about in the next hour. As I said, if you want to communicate with us, call us on 0208 70 2558. We want to hear from you this afternoon. As I mentioned, we're going to be looking ahead to England's game in the Czech Republic tonight, knowing that all 3 points will secure their place at Euro 2020. We'll also be focusing on a few different Premier League clubs. Chelsea and Crystal Palace are the clubs that we'll be focusing on this afternoon, and the managerial hot seat, as per usual, not just in the Premier League, but also between 2 and 3 of the Championship. So many managerial positions under threat. So many people have already lost their jobs. Who could replace those respective managers at their respective clubs? Just a quick word on the Rugby World Cup. There is one game going on today. It is Australia v Georgia in Pool D. Australia currently lead by 17 points to 8. After 74 minutes, so just over 5 minutes to go. Pretty wet conditions out in Japan. Obviously, Typhoon Hagibis, or Super Typhoon Hagibis, is very much on its way to Japan. It's supposedly at the moment the size of Japan. Obviously, most games cancelled tomorrow. England's game against France, Le Crunch, has been cancelled, as has New Zealand's game against Italy. Ireland will play Samoa tomorrow. Obviously, the big talking point, though, as we'll talk about in the next couple of hours, is the Scotland-Japan game that, as it stands, is still going ahead. But a decision will be made on Sunday morning as to whether that game can go ahead, which will decide who gets through, along with what we would assume Ireland in that group. As Australia do score their third try, they've made hard work of it in tough conditions, but they have scored their third try, one try away from a bonus point victory. Let's look ahead then tonight to England's game against the Czech Republic. They play in Prague tonight, knowing, as I mentioned, that if they pick up the win, they will secure their place at Euro 2020 next summer. Gareth Southgate got some interesting decisions to make. Mason Mount is expected to start in the lineup. Hallelujah. Finally, some creativity in England's midfield will be injected. James Maddison pulled out of the squad with illness, which obviously you can't help that, but disappointing that perhaps Gareth Southgate doesn't rate him as highly as everyone else does. But Mason Mount is going to get his opportunity, has been one of the sparkling lights in the Premier League at the start of this season. He is set to play in a midfield three with a guy that he knows pretty well from his childhood, Declan Rice, who was obviously at the Chelsea Academy before going to West Ham. They're set to start in midfield. We expect Jordan Pickford to continue in goal. The back four is where some interesting questions. We expect Harry Maguire to be in there. We expect Ben Chilwell to be in there. But who will start at right back and at centre back? is where there's definitely a division in opinion. Obviously, it's Kieran Trippier versus Trent Alexander-Arnold for the right-back spot. At centre-back, it could be any one of a number. It could be Tyrone Mings. It could be Joe Gomez. It could be a call-up or a selection for the recent call-up for Keyo Tomori, or it could be Michael Keane. So plenty of decisions at centre-back. In the midfield, we expect it to be a trio of Jordan Henderson, Declan Rice and Mason Mount, and then the front three, Raheem Sterling, Harry Kane and Jadon Sancho. Question on many people's lips, is that the best, most formidable front three in international football? Other ones that spring to mind, you'd think of France, Kylian Mbappe, Ousmane Dembele and Antoine Griezmann. Brazil, Neymar, Gabriel Jesus and Roberto Firmino. That's kind of where we are. Which one of those three would you take? There's no doubt that with the England three, Harry Kane is a proven world-class striker, 20, 25 goals every single season. Raheem Sterling's gone from strength to strength as one of kind of the informed players over the last couple of years in the Premier League as well as in Europe. And Jadon Sancho, I mean, what more can we say about this young lad? Arguably the most talented player at his age in world football. So much interest will be in him next summer, I'm sure, from Premier League clubs trying to lure him back to the Premier League. So there's certainly that debate. Who would you go for? Would you go for England's trio of Sancho, Sterling and Kane? Would you go for France's trio of Griezmann, Mbappe and Dembele? Or Brazil's Jesus, Firmino and Neymar? Which one of those three? If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558 to give your views on which is the best front three in international football. Another man that was giving his views ahead of England's game tonight was Steve Howey, the former Newcastle and England defender who joined the Breakfast Show this morning. He was giving his views on England, about the Longstaff brothers at Newcastle, and potentially, obviously, the story about the racist abuse and whether England players will yet again be subjected to racist abuse, which has no place in football or society. They started by asking Steve how confident he was that England will win tonight.
Yeah, you'd have thought so. I mean, look, I think Gareth's got, a fantastic young squad together now. I think the worrying thing, I suppose, is, you know, lately been conceding a few goals. But we've certainly got the players to cause them problems. And of course, you'd have thought that, you know, we would go there as favourites. But of course, going away from home to these countries is always going to be difficult. They'll raise the game, absolutely, without a doubt. But I feel as though we have got enough quality to make sure that, you know, we can get the job done.
One area I want to talk to you about, of course, an area of expertise for yourself, the centre-back pairing. So it looks like it's going to be Maguire and Keane tonight. A few discussions as to whether they are the best centre-back pairing, but from what you've seen of them, are they good enough to help us go deep into a major tournament?
I have to be honest, I'm a little bit surprised with Keane. I think, there's a couple of defenders. I mean, for me, I think I'm surprised that somebody like Conor Cody hasn't been involved. Mm. I think he's been, very, very good for Wolves last season. I think this season, I mean, I watched them against Manchester City and I thought he was absolutely excellent. But look, I mean, King's in that position. He's been in the squad now for a period of time. Obviously, you've got Maguire, who's a very good player, not having the best of times at Man United, but Man United's just not having the best of times, full stop. Mm-hmm. But, you know, still both very, very good players. So hopefully they can bond, they can have that understanding. And if you get that, then it's half the battle.
Looking at the front three, it looks likely that it will be Sandra Keane and Sterling. Your thoughts on that as a front three partnership?
Well, again, I mean, it's an exciting partnership. I'm obviously disappointed that Madison's had to pull out, I think, through illness. But, you know, Mason Mount, everybody's been talking about him. Tammy Abrahams, everybody's been talking about him as well. Sterling, I mean, look, he's been in fantastic form. He has been for a long time now, and that's certainly a lot down to Guardiola. But obviously, I think Sterling himself, because he's put the hard work in. You know, certainly the front three will cause problems to anybody, and I expect the same again tonight.
And I've got to ask you again, another area of expertise, Newcastle, of course. The Longstaff brothers making the headlines at the weekend. Matty Longstaff today has been linked with the under-21s, potentially for the next squad, and Sean Longstaff as well, of course, been linked with the first team. Do you think they're ready for England call-ups?
Well, look, I mean, I think Sean did ever so well when he first came in, and then he unfortunately got the injury. It's took him a while to kind of get back to good form. I think his game against Man United was excellent. And we've seen, you know, Gareth is not afraid to put lads in who are, you know, still at a young age. Maybe he's not as many Premier League games behind him as what used to be. But Gareth has proven that he hasn't got any problems with that. And I think if Sean continues to progress, then I've got no doubts that in the future he will be in the squad. And I think as far as Matty's concerned, I mean, look, you couldn't have had a better debut. You know, you're making your debut against Manchester United, 52,000 there. He has an excellent game and scores the winner. So, again, you know, it's somebody that I'm sure Steve Bruce will nurture him, look after him. And again, if he continues to do what he's doing, then of course he will make that next step up to the under-21s.
Just want to touch on the game they've got upcoming against Bulgaria. A lot made of the potential for racism based on past experience. Out of interest, have you been involved in any games, whether it be England or club football, where you've experienced that? You've experienced that some of the players in the team are receiving racist chants?
Well, I mean, look, that's kind of back in the day. I mean, I'm pretty old now, so of course it went, it did go on. But I think we were still, unfortunately, I think it was just one of those things. But I think now everybody's a lot more educated. Everybody seems to know what is right and what's wrong. I mean, it was never right. But at the same time, I think you know, nowadays, I think it's absolutely right what's been discussed in the England camp. I mean, you would like to think that players would want to stay on, and I'm sure they do. But of course, it is a team game, and if you've got, you might get two or three players that are subject to this, which is horrendous for them. But you, and will want to see the game out. And basically, I think the best way to answer them is to win, and to win emphatically. But of course, if there's one of the players that's maybe is feeling comfortable with it, and rightly so, you are a team. And if it's a case of coming off, then you come off. But if that is the case, then something, you know, huge has to be done. It's no good just fining these clubs or countries. You know, you've got to make a major statement to basically say to everybody else, look, this is totally unacceptable. And I think if it does happen against Bulgaria, because we know they've got history, then if the lads come off, for me, I think the only way to actually react to that from FIFA and UEFA is to ban them and is to kick them out, because it is unacceptable. And as I said, fines is just not enough, completely not enough. But totally behind the team. It is a team game. And if you've got one individual that's, you know, feeling it a bit more than some of the others, then, you know, as long as that person's strong enough to actually make his views known, then, you know, fine, walk off.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. A couple more players just want to ask you on. Henderson and Rice, looks likely that they'll start. You think they're the right two to offer the protection for the back four?
Well, I think, look how far Jordan Henderson's come on since he went to Liverpool. I mean, he's the mainstay, he's the captain. I think a fantastic player. He does that job very well. I think not only that, he's a fantastic organiser. He is the type of person that gives players a kick up the backside if they're not doing their job. And look how well West Ham's done so far this season. And obviously Declan Rice is one of the reasons for that. So, two very good players. But as I said, you can look around the whole of the squad and certainly the team that Gareth puts out, and it has got good quality, and it's exciting times really for the English national team.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're going to be turning our attention to all things Chelsea now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Nizar Kinsella, Chelsea correspondent for Goal. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Nizar. Let's look back at the Chelsea win on the week last weekend. It feels like an age ago, doesn't it? Last weekend of Premier League action. 4-1 win away at Southampton. Even though there was a nervy period for about 10 or 15 minutes after Southampton scored, it was a pretty routine win, as well as a decent performance from Frank Lampard's side.
Yeah, it was. A lot of fans were telling me it was the best atmosphere, away atmosphere they'd experienced, the fans who went to the game. And yeah, it was sort of reflected in the jubilation that the fans had for seeing Frank Lampard-led Chelsea team winning comfortably in a Premier League game. That in itself was a massive thing, especially with the youngsters playing, the team that Chelsea fans identify with a lot. You've got Mason Mount, celebrating in front of the Southampton fans of the Pompey lad, but Tammy Abraham, him and Fikayo Tomori have been at the club for so long, since they're 8 years old, they're living their dreams, and yeah, it's just sort of a very positive vibe at the moment. And Frank Lampard was keen to say that after the last international break, or ahead of the last international break, that Chelsea were quite down because they just dropped points against Leicester at home and then Sheffield United as well. So it's really good for them that they're sort of up there, just 2 points off Man City now. And yeah, they're looking good and people identify with the team.
Did you think, Nizar, that it would take Frank Lampard's kind of a while to get going? How would you assess their start, therefore? 14 points from their first 8 games. They're fifth, but they're only 2 points off Manchester City, who are in second. Are we starting to see Frank Lampard's star really come through? And are Chelsea fans kind of getting a little bit kind of more excited than perhaps they expected to be at the start of the season?
Yeah, I do think it's a bit better than expectations, but Chelsea do have a good team still. And Chelsea, you know, they've dropped points here and there. They've lost a game in the Champions League. And yeah, they've had ups and downs still this season. But it just sort of shows how the Premier League is at the moment, the fact that nobody's running away with it except Liverpool. And then you've got quite a big mid-table, basically. And Man City are dropping points and everyone else is dropping points. So Chelsea can definitely be encouraged, really, that they can finish in the top four. This young team is sort of finding their feet at this level, and they're kind of proving that they're ready for it. So maybe the results will get even better. But yeah, certainly, I think everyone's quite happy about the way things have gone at Chelsea. Sort of without being a bit over the top about it, I think that, yeah, Chelsea fans can be happy, but I think there's going to be more ups and downs. I think Champions League as well, these next two games against Ajax are going to be pretty key. And then you've got Valencia as well. So I think Valencia are going to be the team that are going to try and knock Chelsea out of the Champions League. And I think getting through that's going to be a massive challenge. And then I think a top four finish would be a big achievement for Frank Lampard in his first season.
One man that's made an impressive start now that he's permanently at Chelsea rather than on loan at a Championship club is Tammy Abraham. He scored 8 Premier League goals so far this season, joint level with Sergio Aguero at the top of the goal scoring charts. Do you think now that he's in the England squad, he can start pushing Harry Kane? And the ultimate question is, can he consistently do this over the whole season? Because it's all well and good having a good first 8 games, but can he maintain that over a 38-game season?
Yeah, well, I think that he should be pushing Harry Kane. The ambition should be as high as possible, and that is a very big ambition. But if you want to be a Chelsea player, you're going to have to, a Chelsea striker as well, you're going to have to threaten to get 30 goals a season. And I think that that's what he needs to be aiming for. You know, if he gets 20, I think everyone will be delighted with that. I think a lot of people didn't believe that Tammy Abraham was going to be good enough, and he has proven with those 8 goals that he is ready to wear the Chelsea shirt, certainly as much as the people who replaced sort of Diego Costa and Didier Drogba. Sort of, you're talking about Higuain and Morata, and he's definitely at least performed to their levels, if not a lot better. So, yeah, I think that he should be aiming as high as possible. I think that's what he is doing. He's very, very confident. You speak to him, and yeah, nothing fazes him. But he's also just so assured. You know, he missed a penalty in the Super Cup final, caused Chelsea to lose in a game where they played really well. One of his biggest moments of his career, and he sort of failed, and that could crush a player, but it didn't seem to affect him. He sort of came back and bagged a lot of goals, which is absolutely fantastic. And yeah, I mean, it's just also the types of goals he's scoring, all different types. And it can only be good for England if we have two good strikers pushing each other, because I think sometimes maybe Kane hasn't really been pushed by a sort of second striker at England, and to have Tammy Abraham around, especially such a young striker who's only going to get better, I think that that's going to be good for the country, especially ahead of the Euros.
Another man that's in the England squad and has made an impressive start is Mason Mount. He's a player that quite clearly has so much technical ability at such a young age, made a massive impression for me. Him and James Maddison are, when everyone's fit, obviously James Maddison's ill at the moment, but they should be definitely in that England midfield. Do you think there's a risk that we could put too much pressure on them too early?
Yeah, I guess so. But I think they're happy. They need to keep pushing themselves. They've kind of proven themselves to a point. But like you said, they need to do it over a 38-game season at the highest level. And then there's going to be question marks about, are they going to do it against Champions League opponents? Can they do it at international level? And they should be aiming to do all that. England have big ambitions. So do Chelsea. And that's what comes with the territory, really, to be honest. So, yeah, I think they need a bit of time to develop, but they're also, if they don't play well enough, they're going to lose their place for both England and Chelsea. So it's kind of a catch-22. They need a bit of room to develop, but and maybe a bit of forgiveness if they have a bad performance here and there. But they have to deliver. Or people like Willian are playing really well at Chelsea, and other people like Ross Barkley, who's lost his spot to Mason Mount at both England and Chelsea. He's desperate to get back in there. So, I'm a really big fan of Mason Mount, though. I think he's fantastic. I think he's something that England has been lacking. Somebody who's really technical, moves the ball really intelligently, great off the ball. He's kind of a full package of a midfielder and a type of midfielder we don't often produce in this country. We usually produce box-to-box types, powerhouses, but nice to see a sort of more diminutive, technical midfielder emerge and really make a mark in the Premier League. And I think Southgate will find him a great asset ahead of the Euros. And he's a certain, as long as he stays fit, I think, to almost get into that Euros team, because Southgate has been tracking him for a while. And I think he sees him as sort of a missing link of a midfielder that England needs. You touched on Maddison as well. Great player. He's been fantastic this season. Such a shame he's going to miss out tonight.
Fikayo Tomori has earned his first call-up into the full England setup. He's represented Canada under 20 level, having been born over there, also eligible to play for Nigeria, but has seemingly chosen England. For me, personally, I think it's too early. I think he's had some good games recently, but my point would be, if he didn't play for Chelsea, I don't think he'd be in this squad. Is that unfair on Tomori to say that if he played for, let's say, Burnley, I'm not picking on Burnley, but if he played for Burnley, then he might not be in the squad? Case in point, James Tarkowski has been playing well for the last few years and is seemingly fallen out of favour.
No, you are partly right. I think that, if you play for a big team, then you're just way more visible. And I think that, especially Southgate, he tends towards picking these players, and he tends towards picking young players as well. With the prospect to grow. So I think that's where Tomori comes in. But Tomori's had a really good season, just as good as Tammy Abraham or Mason Mount. And to come in as a central defender as well, is that bit much more difficult, because it's a position that kind of requires you to command a presence and to sort of have experience. And Tomori's sort of playing that role without having that, and he's doing a fantastic job for Chelsea. They've not been the best defence in the Premier League by any means, far from it, in fact. But he's actually been the best of Chelsea defenders this season, best centre-back. He's been better than... Rudiger's only played once, so you can't really say anything about him, but Christensen and Zouma are below him in the pecking order, so that certainly says something about this lad. Very intelligent, I think that he's great on the ball as well, building play from the back, and I think that could be a problem position for England, and potentially there's a role going next to Harry Maguire, so I think it would be good for England if he emerged and kept this going. It's also good to see him play in numerous positions, in a back four and a back three. He's done that equally well. He's definitely been a surprise package for me this season. I'm a bit like you. I thought he looked like he was going on loan to Everton, and then it sort of got cancelled at last minute because David Luiz left for Arsenal. So I thought he's going to be a fourth choice centre back, be on the fringes. You know, you don't see many young centre backs making it at top clubs, but he's just found it quite easy. He's been brilliant since he's come in. I think he's surprised himself by how well he's done. Now he's in the England squad, and now he's in the Chelsea team, and he's best mates with Tammy Abraham as well, which is lovely to see. So, I think that Tarkowski can feel hard done by, but I don't think it's a slight on Tomori. I think he does deserve his shot as well.
Chelsea in the Champions League have 1-1 lost one. They lost at home against Valencia, won away in Lille. But it feels like the next two games are massively important. It starts with the away trip out to Ajax first in the doubleheader before the home game. Is there now a big pressure on Chelsea in these two games? Ajax have won both games, look really, really impressive in their first two games, not seemingly feeling the ill effects of losing Frankie de Jong and Matthias de Ligt. Are these two games now really important? And does it pile more pressure, actually, on the away game for Chelsea against Valencia? Because it seems from the outside as if that's the game that probably will determine whether Chelsea will go through or not.
Yeah, you're right. I think Ajax will be going through. They're looking great. They picked up 6 points already, and you'd expect them to beat Lille at home. They've already beat them away, and they beat Valencia away as well. So you're thinking Ajax are gonna do the business really, and then it's just one of the others. So Chelsea need to make sure they're not in the Europa League. It's going to be tough, and I think they need to get a win against Ajax in one of the two games to make sure that they can get through over Valencia, who have already beaten them. at Stamford Bridge as well, so they'll fancy beating them, you know, in the Mestalla. I think the Champions League is going to be where young players are going to find it tough, because they're used to English football, but then the European stage is a bit different. The referees are different. They let different things go. You need that game management, which has sometimes been missing from Chelsea this season. When they've won, they've tended to blow teams away, but when it's a tight game, they've found themselves on the wrong side of it at times. So, that's where I kind of worry about Chelsea. And, I think they're going to have some difficulties this season. There's no doubt about that. But I think there'll be a lot of patience among the fans. I think you might get sort of expectation rising among the media and people who are sort of outside it. But especially the match-going fans, they're very patient with this group of Chelsea players. It's a very different Chelsea era, probably the most different Chelsea era since Abramovich took over. Fans are just patient. I think Abramovich is patient. They're willing to have a failure of a season and build. So, it's kind of, everyone's moving in the right direction, or the same direction again, which is not what we're used to at Chelsea. We're used to very disparate things going on and a lot of controversy and stuff like that. So it's going to be a period of calm, regardless of the results.
And just finding is just a final matter off the field, and it's the news that Petr Cech has signed for National Ice Hockey League team Guildford Phoenix. He will be the Phoenix's third choice keeper and will train when his Chelsea schedule allows. Did you see this coming, that Petr Cech, one of kind of the Premier League all-time greats in goal, would suddenly sign for an ice hockey team?
No, I didn't see it coming, really. I know he's a big ice hockey fan. It's like the second biggest sport in Czech Republic after football. He plays ice hockey. He played it as a youngster and stuff like that. So, he's always been a fan of it. There's lots of high-profile Czech stars in ice hockey, but I didn't see it coming. But it's very much a sideline to his main job. I think it's just a bit of fun for him. He lives locally to the team, and he'll still carry on with his Chelsea duties. But, it's going to be good. I think it'll be a good little publicity boost as well for the team, and get people down there to see Petr Cech in goal once again. Such a strange story. You don't see that often in football, do you? A sportsman trying the hand at another sport, especially one like ice hockey. So, such a difficult one.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Nizar. That was Nizar Kinsella, Chelsea correspondent for Goal, talking about a number of Chelsea players in the England squad. For so long, people have been talking about this Chelsea academy and them not getting chances. Well, Tammy Abraham has scored 8 goals so far this season. He's in the England squad. Mason Mount, who, as Nizar mentioned, is a non-English player, if you get what I mean. Technically gifted, which you don't talk about with many England midfielders over the years. The worry is that we put too much pressure, like when Jack Wilshere broke onto the scene saying he's the next Gazza. Let's not put too much pressure on Mason Mount's shoulders yet. And Fikayo Tomori, I think it's too early for him to be picked, and I don't think he'd be there if he didn't play for Chelsea. But if he does play for England, everyone should get behind him, no matter whether you think he should be in that squad or not. But Chelsea, attacking-wise, scoring lots of goals, but they still look frail defensively. They still look like they can be got at in a defensive way. And I think Chelsea games won't be boring this season. I think that's a pretty easy thing to say. They're going to score goals, but they are most certainly not going to keep many clean sheets. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Lovesport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Up next, we'll be talking all things Crystal Palace.
This is Lovesport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. Share your views on what should be the England 11 that's picked tonight. Is England's front three the best in international football? Would you go Kane, Sterling, Sancho? Would you go with France's trio of Griezmann, Mbappe and Dembele? Or would you go with Brazil, Jesus, Firmino and Neymar? Make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Crystal Palace now, and after their 2-1 win away at West Ham last weekend, they came from behind, and we can speak to James Howard from back of the nest this afternoon. Thank you very much for your time, James. I mean, they had to come back from behind, but Roy Hodgson's side showed some real character in that second half.
Yeah, hi Kieran. Yeah, sorry about the noise. Just got off my private helicopter to take the call, but no joke, I'm at Liverpool Street, and there's been a few demonstrators in the helicopter hovering above, so hopefully you can still hear me. Going back to the game, it's been a strange season, actually. I don't think we've particularly played outstandingly well, but we seem to be picking up some great results. I mean, you know, forgive me, but a lot of Palace fans out there, we were all very, very pessimistic in the summer. You know, we'd lost our player of the season, Wan-Bissaka, for 50 million. We had Zaha putting in a transfer request on the last day that he could. He's our most valuable player and arguably our best player. We had no striker replacement for the on-loan Batshuayi, and we were left with the likes of Benteke, Connor Wickham and Jordan Ayew, who renewed his loan. So it was all looking very, very bleak. But surprise, surprise, we seem to be coping particularly well. Wilf Zaha is now positive. He's back playing well. He's switched on. He was on BBC Africa saying that he's now focused on the team. I think he got rid of his agent. You know, he's getting back to where he was last season. And, you know, we've also got Gary Cahill, who's been immense for us. And I think this is a real Roy Hodgson team at the moment. And we've been, you know, I've been particularly impressed with it.
Interesting you mentioned those comments by Wilfried Zaha. He did also say that his head was all over the place during the kind of speculation over the summer when he was linked with moves to Arsenal and to Everton. Can you forgive that as a Crystal Palace fan to say that he was perhaps tempted by those moves? Or are you surprised that a couple of months down the line now that he should kind of just be, not shutting up, but making sure he gets his head down, knuckles down on the football, and then maybe when the next transfer window arises, then the kind of talk can perhaps start up again?
Yeah, I think most fans are forgiving. You know, he got a clap when he came on as a substitute for his first game. You know, he's been at Palace for many, many years and he's done us a great service. And you can't, you know, not allow him to move on if he wants to for Champions League football or for want of a better club than Palace. The point was, it all happened very suddenly and it did upset a few people. I think that personally, I think that he will go at some point. I'm hoping he stays for the whole of the season. I believe that he needs to probably get back to his form that he had last season. I'm questioning whether he's as valued as he was last season because of his form. But quite frankly, he is a player that will leave a big hole if he does move, that's for sure.
You mentioned the lack of options right up front. That Jordan Ayew did score in that win against West Ham. Christian Benteke, who I think I'm right in saying has scored 4 goals in the last 2 and a bit years. So Crystal Palace are struggling up front. Do you think, I was seeing links the other day linking Palace with potentially a move for Batshuayi in the January transfer window. Do you think that's pretty likely that Hodgson will move for Batshuayi in January? And if so, how much do you think it would cost? Do you reckon Chelsea would try and price Palace out of a move for him?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, Roy's come out and said we need another striker. We needed another striker before the season started, to be frank. But we definitely need one in January. I think, you know, results could go against us. I think maybe we're punching above our weight at the moment. Batshuayi, it would be key. He knows us. He played reasonably well for us. He scored a few goals. And he would be perfect. So if he's available come January, I think the club do need to sort of, you know, spend money. How much is he going to cost us? Well, you know, it's difficult to put a figure on it. I suppose somewhere in the region, maybe of 30 million. I don't know. You guys probably better off than me at valuing him.
One man that Crystal Palace did bring in over the summer was that of Gary Cahill, the experienced, obviously, former England defender, signed a free transfer, having run down his contract at Chelsea, having been kind of frozen out there. How delighted were you at the time with that signing? And were you concerned maybe that to begin with, it might take him a while because he hasn't really played a lot of football in the last couple of years? So it would have been understandable if it had taken him quite a lot of game time to get back up to speed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And from a personal point, I was a little bit anti actually because I don't really want the club to bring in, you know, 34-year-olds. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe they haven't got the legs anymore, and they're just coming for the money, that kind of thing. But you know, a couple of other people I know at Palace said, no, he's quality. We need him. He'd be a great asset to the club. And I've absolutely thrilled by it. I mean, you know, what kind of player can you get for nothing? I mean, all we're doing is paying his wages for the next two years. And quite frankly, you know, he's been arguably the man of the match for the last couple of games. So I'm absolutely over the moon. And I think him being out of that Chelsea side for the last season or so has really fired him up. He's now really, really happy playing. He looks incredibly fit for someone of his age. And he's, the quality on the ball is fantastic. I mean, it's not just the defensive qualities that he's got, but actually, you know, sometimes he's out in the midfield and he's backing up the forwards and he's dribbling and he's going past people and you're thinking, God, this guy's got real quality. So I love it. I mean, it's fantastic. Considering we've lost one defender, Wan-Bissaka, who was a real quality fullback for us, we've certainly gained another one, but for nothing, that's brilliant.
Looking ahead then to the next few games, and it's a tough run for Palace post the international break. It's a home against Manchester City, away at Arsenal, a home to Leicester, away at Chelsea. Do you think the fact that kind of Palace have got off to a good start with 14 points from their first eight games and sixth place has meant that the pressure's taken off a little bit going into that tough run?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is where I'm a little bit reserved in saying, you know, where are we going to be? You know, how well are we going to do over the season? I think this is the sort of crunch, you know, where you come up against a few games like this, and this is where it's going to really test us. But, you know, everyone knows, you know, having the confidence going into these games is brilliant. And it's fully, you know, it gives us the opportunity to maybe sneak the odd sort of, you know, draw or maybe even a win against these sides when it's least expected. I remember last season we played Man City at the end of the season, towards the end. I think we were pretty much safe at that point, and everyone was hoping that we were going to have a real good go at them, because we usually do it at Selhurst Park. When it's a top side, we're usually the ones that cause the upset. But unfortunately, it was a dire game. We lost 2-0, which is fair enough. You'd expect that kind of result against Man City, but we didn't really have a go. We were sort of on the back foot. We were very negative. So I'm definitely hoping that Roy says to the players, you know, come on, but you know, Man City are there. They're one of the teams that can be beaten this season. Let's have a real go for it. We lose, but let's give it a good shot. So I'm hoping. I mean, obviously, we're not favourites to win it, but I'd like to see that if we could give it a good shot.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, James. That was James Howard from Back of the Nest, being disrupted by the disruptive Extinction Rebellion in London. All sorts are going on here in the capital. The weather's not great, and you've got people closing down roads for absolutely no reason. But he was talking about Palace, who've made actually a very good start to the season, if we're being honest. 14 points. They're level on points with Chelsea and Leicester. And yet, people have been praising those teams for their starts. It is a really tough run for Palace after this international break, between this international break and the next one in November. City at home, Arsenal away, Leicester home, Chelsea away. Not easy. But as James kind of intimated there, Selhurst Park has not been an easy place for Manchester City to go over the last few years. It's a 5:30 kickoff on the Saturday, so it'll be under the lights pretty much at Selhurst Park. It will not be easy for City to go there, and they'll be under real pressure going into that game. But considering, I thought they had a pretty poor transfer window. They did not get what they needed in, and they've been left so short up front. For Palace to be on 14 points after eight games, they didn't really replace Aaron Wan-Bissaka. They did manage to keep hold of Wilfried Zaha, but they didn't bring in a centre-forward, which leaves them with Jordan Ayew and Christian Benteke, who has only scored 4 goals in the last 2 years as a centre-forward. I was really concerned about Palace, but they made a good start this season. And ahead of that tough run, perhaps they really did need that good start in case this run doesn't go particularly well for them. Palace fans out there, if you want to get in touch, are you delighted with the way your season started? Are you happy, thrilled with the signing as much as James was of Gary Cahill on a free over the summer? And do you think Wilfried Zaha will leave in January? Call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Up next, we'll be talking about some of the managerial positions under real threat. Could Marco Silva leave Everton? Is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer on his way out of Manchester United? And could Mauricio Pochettino walk away from Tottenham?
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 25. England in action tonight in Prague against the Czech Republic, knowing that all 3 points will secure their place in the Euro 2020s next year. Before we talk about some of the managers on the hot seat in the Premier League, just some tennis news to bring you from the ATP Shanghai Rolex Masters. Some big results have been happening today in the quarterfinals. Sasha Zverev has just beaten Roger Federer Federer, 6-3, 6-7, 6-3. That followed Novak Djokovic being knocked out by Stefanos Tsitsipas, 6-3, 5-7, 3-6. So some big results there. Rafa Nadal could be back to world number one in the next rankings. Producer Laurie, before we talk about kind of the managers on the hot seat, do you think that we're starting to see, it's always the big question, will we see another kind of three or four players really emerge, or is this just a case of it's not a grand slam, it's just a one-off, and Zverev beating Federer or Tsitsipas beating Djokovic isn't something that's going to happen regularly?
Well, that's the thing, and it's been the grand slams where these kind of theories have all always fallen short. People will be in great sort of in form, and you know, we talk about Zverev, obviously, since he won the ATP finals, he's just been really atrocious at Grand Slam, so he hasn't quite managed to translate it. Having said that, we saw Tsitsipas do really well earlier this year at the Australian Open. He, having beaten Djokovic today, is just getting back to form after being pretty disappointing for the rest of the year. Obviously, we've seen Daniil Medvedev, who beat Fabio Fognini earlier today. We saw him get to the final of the US Open, and you know, obviously Rafa Nadal won that and doesn't look like he's going anywhere anytime soon. Also, obviously, you can't read too much into the fact that Djokovic has lost a tournament. He's had a shoulder injury. He won in Tokyo last week. You know, he's not having a major crisis. So, yeah, I mean, it's great to see them coming into form, and hopefully they can put up more of a robust challenge. But, you know, having said that, at this stage, it's still hard to say that when the big three lose, it's not an off day for them rather than... And I'm not saying that these next gen aren't starting to play better, but, you know, they're so good, sort of Federer, Nadal and Djokovic, that it's hard to kind of write them off at any point, really. I mean, look at the gap between Federer's last two Grand Slams. You know, he always, and, you know, very easily could have won another earlier this year against Djokovic in the final. So... I don't know. It's one of those questions that you're a fool to say either way, because you're just never going to be able to say. One thing I would say, though, Federer looked really quite rattled today. I mean, he did really well in the second set tiebreak. He actually saved 5 match points, which is incredible, to take it to a deciding set. But then he was just completely out of sorts in the final set. He received a points deduction, which he... virtually never see, because he hit a ball into the crowd. He was saying, oh no, I didn't mean
very
to
un Roger Federer, isn't it?
I know, he was saying, I didn't mean to hit it into the crowd. And obviously, of course, the other thing about this fixture is it's the first time that Zverev and Federer have played since the Laver Cup, when Federer was swearing and running around and saying, I don't want your mental state to collapse, you've got to stick there. And maybe it's kind of come back to bite him, because Zverev, who famously fades and takes games to 5 sets or 3 sets and loses, has managed to turn the knife in on Roger and use his good advice against him and advance to the semi-finals. Also, just quickly, we've mentioned Tsitsipas. You've got to check out, there's a lovely video where he didn't realise that he's now through to the ATP finals, and the interview tells him, and he's absolutely made up.
There you go. Sporting interviews where someone has no idea what's coming up next, and then the pure emotion the moment they find out. Let's talk then about the managerial hot seats. Who is under pressure? Who might leave soon? Let's start on Merseyside. Everton. Marco Silva has been given the...
Klopp there.
Mate, 17 consecutive Premier League wins. Jurgen can stay forever. He's an absolute legend. Everton have done the dreaded thing that no manager wants to hear. They've given him their backing. They say they've got no plans to sack Silva. Some people are suggesting he's got 3 games to save his job. I think he's massively overrated, and I think he should be sacked. Do you think he is rightly under huge amounts of pressure, and how much longer do you think he'll last?
Well, the thing with Marco Silva is it was odd, even when he went from Hull to Watford. I think I've actually heard you make this point before, but, you know, yes, he played good football, he turned their form around slightly, but he didn't keep them up. And he didn't then go down, bring them back up and keep them in the Premier League like the likes of Rafa Benitez did.
Oh, get a Newcastle quote in there, definitely.
I mean, obviously we're not comparing them. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know whether he's been slightly Evertoned, though, because he was doing really well at Watford. The form kind of dipped, and, you know, you could say that was because of the attention. But how many managers have we seen come into Everton, spend loads of money and then just fail to deliver? And it just seems like the same old story. Who are Everton going to get in that's going to be able to change their fate in that regard? There's something, maybe we talk about directors of football and how effective they are. Maybe there's something deeper than just the manager there that they need to really overturn how they manage their recruitment at the club, because everyone was so excited about Moise Keane. Has he scored?
Nope, and he was sent off for Italy under-21s last night. They brought Marcel Brands in, obviously, as the director of football, but that doesn't seem to be working. They're wasting a lot of money. I love how you've now coined the term Everton. You've been Everton.
Goes with Spursy, doesn't it?
Exactly. You can be Spursy, now you can be Everton. I don't think he will last much longer. Jose Mourinho has been tipped to take that job. One of Mourinho's former clubs, Manchester United, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The view is Manchester United's board have said he maintains their full backing. They're going to stay patient with him. Some people suggesting he needs a couple more transfer windows. Do you think if Manchester United got beaten heavily by Liverpool straight after the international break, which would mean that Liverpool would tie Manchester City's all-time record of 18 consecutive Premier League wins, would it get to a point where Manchester United got to an untenable position where they couldn't continue with Solskjaer?
I suppose potentially, but I'd find that a silly policy. If you're not going to sack him already, or you're not kind of putting plans in place to sack him already, then why are you looking at the arguably the best team in the world right now and playing against them a potential heavy defeat? You know, any team can lose 5-0 to Liverpool. Literally any team in the world. Like Man City can do, Barcelona can do. It's a stupid policy if they're basing something on that game. And I can see you smirking away.
Greater than seeing Manchester United in a right old hole.
Rosy Liverpool cheeks. But I just think that would be a ridiculous policy. I mean, I personally think that, you know, they're going to give him another transfer window. You can say it over and over again, but the players that he brought in, yes, they weren't kind of groundbreaking necessarily. But if he's going to go on in the same vein, bring young players and kind of build around, then if that's their idea of what they want to do, they have to give it time. Having said that, it's impossible to tell because the club just seems to be being run so badly in every way. So, you know, I don't think they're approaching it with logic. So, as you say, it wouldn't surprise me if they fired him after Liverpool. I just don't think that's necessarily a very good strategy if that's what you're basing it on.
Their three new signings have been their best three players so far this season. Just finally then, Tottenham, Mauricio Pochettino. He's been saying things over the last few months to suggest he may soon be on his way out of Tottenham. Do you think Daniel Levy would have the cojones to sack him? Or would, if he's going to leave Tottenham, would he have to leave to do it?
What you mean, would he have to decide to leave rather than get sacked?
Would they sack him, or would they wait for him to resign?
I think it's difficult. Obviously, Mourinho is another club that he's been linked with, the Spurs. He's been watching there. And that kind of, when they were Leon, he turned the Leon job down because he's imminently going to take a Premier League job. You can't really see that being anything other than Everton or Spurs. Unless it's Newcastle.
You love mentioning Newcastle every single
attempt. Obviously was linked over the summer. But no, in all seriousness, I mean, to be honest, as much as things are going wrong, you know, it's the players out there losing 7-2. Pochettino's done great things at Spurs. Yes, potentially he needs to move on. But it's kind of the thing where maybe he doesn't want a break. He wants to keep managing. And is he just waiting for the job? Because obviously, he said at the end of last season, had he won the Champions League, he would have liked to leave. And, do you know, there are so many things that can change in world football quite quickly, and all of a sudden, there could be a really big job for him. I think, personally, it would be a downward step for him if he went to Man United at the current moment. And I think that he actually has more of a chance of winning the league with Spurs than he does with Man United.
There you go. You heard it here first from Laurie Callis. Tottenham have more of a chance of winning the Premier League than Manchester United, and he can do better things at Tottenham than Manchester United. If you want to have your view on that, call us on 0208 70 20 558. Does Pochettino have a higher ceiling at Tottenham than he potentially would do at Manchester United? It feels like he's taken Tottenham as far as he can. Will he walk, or will he be sacked by the Tottenham board?
This is Love Sport.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.